Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Well, quite a momentous day in Federal Parliament today. In the Blue Room, just along from the Prime Ministerial Office in Parliament House, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, together with Indigenous advisers and ministers, laid out the question the country will vote on as to whether or not there will be recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders in the country's constitution. And the Prime Minister was emotionally fought back tears as he revealed the question Cabinet had just endorsed.
In that spirit of cooperation and thoughtful, respectful dialogue has been so important at arriving at this point in such a united fashion. The question that Australians will be asked at this year's referendum is a very simple one. It will read, a proposed law to alter the Constitution to recognise the First Peoples of Australia by establishing an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice. Do you approve this proposed alteration? That's the question before the Australian people. Nothing more, but nothing less. To not put this to a vote is to concede defeat. You only win when you run on the field and engage. And let me tell you, my government is engaged. We're all in. I say to Australia, don't miss it. Don't miss it. This is a real opportunity to take up the generous invitation of the Uluru Statement from the Heart. This is about the heart, but it's also about the head. If you think things have been working up to now, look at the closing the gap issue.
Yeah, the Prime Minister there. The question had been framed after much work and consideration by the Indigenous Voice to Parliament Working Group. Now, that group included Professor Megan Davis. Now, Professor Davis is a chair in constitutional law at the University of New South Wales. Linda Burney, Minister for Indigenous Australians, and the Western Australian Senator Pat Dodson, who also spoke today.
We implore all Australians to unite behind us and walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future.
Today is a truly historic day. Today we take a big step forward on the long journey to constitutional recognition.
This requires all Australians. We need your help, all Australians, to see the significance at this moment with this level of unity here, this level of magnanimity, this level of dedication that has taken place amongst us and the government, that we as Australians can arise to a better relationship with our First Peoples. One where we are liberated and when our hearts and minds are cleaned from the tyranny of the oppression and suffering and shame that we've lived with.
Yes, well, joining us for Nightlife News Breakdown tonight is Hugh Rimmington, National Affairs Editor at 10 News First. Hugh, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip.
Well, a very emotional day in Parliament. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and the Indigenous Working Group applauded as they walked down the corridor from Parliament House's Blue Room. And, well, shades of Bob Hawke and his public displays of emotion from the Prime Minister. How did you see it?
I thought the first 10 minutes of that from Anthony Albanese in particular was among the most powerful moments I've seen in Parliament. Mm. And I think one of the things that it has brought forward, and he said that there was a little grab there that you had that it's about the heart and it's about the head, is that there's been a lot of sort of technical discussion about the wording of the voice and questions that are or have not been answered and constitutional law questions and a whole bunch of things. And it's very hard to get emotionally engaged with that. And what we saw there was a Prime Minister who was quite clearly, and in his own words, engaged. And there was a sense that there was a moment in history, and it's going to be a moment in history that is now dependent on all Australians, 18 million voters, to decide what comes of it, nothing at all, or or a change in the constitution, and the call has gone out for us to all as voters to, you know, to play our role in that. And, you know, I think everyone spoke powerfully there, Dodson and Marcia Langton and Megan Davis. I thought it was also significant that among the people up on the stage was Ken Wyatt, the Coalition's Indigenous Affairs Minister from the previous government. So there's bipartisanship, if you like, on that platform as the Prime Minister spoke. We've yet to see whether it'll be bipartisanship once the Liberal Party room has gone through and had a look at it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's not at this stage a partisan issue, isn't it? And the government's been very keen to try and make it not so. And indeed,
it's partisan to the extent that the National Party has already come out and said they'll vote against it.
Yes, they're the only ones. They've said they'll vote against it. That's right. And they said today that, well, now that the wording's out, hasn't changed their mind about the thing. Although, yeah, I mean, David Littleproud, as I say, has... maybe he's marking out territory that he thinks he's already staked.
So I say to those living in capital cities today, just hear our voice, our understanding, and the experience and lived wisdom of what will shift the dial and close the gap, not what will divide us.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
Well, they staked that position, and in part they were pressured to do it because among their number is the Country Liberal Party, who sits with the Nationals from the Northern Territory, the Senator Jacinta Price, who is very strongly an opponent of it. There are a number of areas, in a way you can say that the people who are the opponents of the voice as have emerged so far come under certain clusters. So Senator Price's perspective, and it's held by some others, including Lydia Thorpe, who's broken from the Greens over this and is now an independent, is that essentially there's a kind of an elite group of Aboriginal people who dominate these things, and it's not a grassroots movement, and all it does is produce another kind of elite talking shop that doesn't get down on the ground. So that's an argument that the Nationals have come with. Lydia Thorpe goes on to say that her main complaint with it is that it's powerless. It's an advisory body only. You know, it's funny because the National Party argument is that there's too much power there. The Greens, or sorry, Lydia Thorpe's argument is that it's too powerless to be worth a candle, and so therefore don't bother with it. And then there's another area which the Liberal Party is giving oxygen to, which is essentially a conservative constitutional legal view that espoused by the constitutional law professor Greg Craven, that in becoming a voice not just to Parliament but to the executive government, it opens up the possibility of there being endless litigation to the High Court. And there are other legal scholars who say that's not so. Brett Walker, one of the most eminent barristers who's appeared before the High Court, I think more than any other currently serving barrister, says that's a furphy. So, but we don't know that yet. But that's something which the Liberal Party has certainly given a lot of energy to.
That's right. Peter Dutton was latching onto that today, saying he wants to see more, and he particularly wants to see the Solicitor General's legal advice on the wording made public, because the Uluru Statement from the Heart sets up the voice as a voice to Parliament. It's now a voice coming out of the referendum working group on to Parliament and the executive. And the short argument here is that if that's to be the case, will there be legal action if that advice is ignored by the executive government? This is Peter Dutton.
The government's proposing at the moment is that the Australian public will go to vote on a Saturday. And then from the Monday on, for 6 months, there'll be consultation on the model. Now, that is putting the cart before the horse, and a lot of that detail can be ironed out. It can be put forward, proposed, and people can then make a judgment about whether this is going to improve the situation for Indigenous Australians or whether it's going to put another layer of bureaucracy in place. So I think the design principles are fine, but people want to know the detail, how practically it will work, and as importantly as anything, the considered legal advice around what the words will mean.
Now, these may be reasonable questions, but is the opposition going to continue this line, do you think, until voting day, saying we want more detail?
It's a very difficult issue for Peter Dutton because there are certainly people within his party room who support The Voice and have done for a length of time. There are others who don't like it for a whole bunch of reasons. And they are also, you know, reasonably being politicians, sniffing the wind about where the public will lie. At the moment, there is a majority support on the polling that's available to us for The Voice, but that has been drifting south over time, and it appears to be softening somewhat. So there's always a political calculation as well as a principal calculation. And right now he's in the position where he is having a bob each way. He's certainly not settling a position on that. And quite rightly, he says there's got to be party room discussions in the Liberal Party to decide where they're going to go on that. But there's also a lot of process still to come. This legislation with the wording of The Voice goes into the Parliament next Thursday next week. It goes to the lower house. The numbers will be there for that, no question. It then will go to a parliamentary committee process, and doubtless people will have their say on how it could be improved or concerns, raise issues, and so on. We already know that there is divided expert legal opinion on whether it's likely to produce more with reference to the executive giving advice to
this argument is getting any traction at all with people? I suspect it's such a complicated argument. This is the argument over whether it might give rise to legal action, that it's hard to see that it becoming a popular issue, is it or not?
But I think what it does is it gives cover to people who don't like it.
Yeah.
And if you look at social media, there's a lot of people out there who don't like it because they see it as dividing the country by race.
That's right.
There's a view that, you know, that it exists out there that says that it is you know, preferencing Aboriginal people in a way that disadvantages everyone else. It's not an argument I'm particularly attracted to, but it's an argument that's out there, and it has to be acknowledged. So these sorts of constitutional arguments give cover for people to say, oh, I don't like it because it's messing with the Constitution in ways that might be bad, rather than making a different argument, which might attract, you know, the dreaded epithet of being a racist if you oppose it. So these things do matter. And, you know, we've still got a way to go on how all that lands. But I think what we've seen today, Linda Burney said the starting gun has been fired. And people might have thought, gee, I thought the starting gun was fired on the election night when Albanese won. And in his speech that night, to the surprise of many, gave this such prominence. But certainly we're at the situation where the government has now given full commitment to the words and the process. It is now an emotional commitment. It is not just any other piece of legislation. It is something which is will either get up and be part of the Albanese legacy and the national legacy, or it will not get up and it will also be part of the legacy.
Mm. Yes, as I said last night, it is an intriguing question for Peter Dutton and the Libs too, as to where they want to be when the dust settles on all this, and which side of the equation they want to be on when the dust settles.
Well, I mean, Peter Dutton has said he regrets that he walked out on the apology to the Stolen Generations by Kevin Rudd, and you know the argument's been made to him. Well, don't be on the wrong side of this argument. Don't in 10 years' time, after it's all gone down in flames, then say you regret it, because the opportunity by then will have passed. And we know that of the 8 constitutional referendums that have passed out of 44 tries, the ones that have passed have required bipartisan support. So Peter Dutton, in many ways, it's a test of his judgment, and it's a test of his leadership. You know, he may make a decision based on sound reasoning why he can't support it. Now, there'll be many people say no such reasoning exists. Who knows? He may make a decision not to support it for other reasons, political reasons, and he may make a decision to support it. But all of those are difficult, really substantive, you know, really kind of defining decisions that he's going to make.
Yeah, they are.
In the next months.
Yep, they are. Meanwhile, we turn to the subject of Senator Lydia Thorpe, former Green senator, now an independent senator, she asserts, who was outside Parliament House today visiting, well, she was attending a talk by British anti-trans campaigner Posey Parker, real name Kelly J. Keane. Lydia Thorpe was there putting herself in the centre of attention. Here's a bit from it. Yes, well, it sounds like the lawns of Parliament House on any given sitting day, I suspect. Lydia Thorpe, tell us what happened, Hugh.
So, as you say, Posey Parker, as she likes to be called, is an anti-trans activist. Her rally down in Melbourne, people recall, attracted pleasant people who turned up with their faces masked and gave Nazi salutes. She does not describe herself as a feminist, and yet there is a movement that does describe itself as a feminist movement that says that people transitioning from male to female are an affront to women, and therefore the process must be opposed. And so she's she's an effective activist in this, in the sense that she gets a lot of attention. So there she was outside the Parliament. There was a small group supporting her and listening to her, you know, drawn by what she had to say. Pauline Hanson came out and spoke on the same platform. And there was a much larger group who opposed what they had to say. Then approaching from behind with an Aboriginal flag across her shoulder appeared Lydia Thorpe. And when she got to within, I think, probably about 5 metres, Posey Parker wasn't aware of any of this happening. She then started yelling, "You are not welcome, you are not welcome." There's some dispute as to whether it was a police officer or some other security officer, certainly a uniformed figure, grabbed her from behind. I've looked at the video in slow-mo. I've looked at lots of different ways. Did he grab her around the neck from behind, or was it more like across her shoulder and armpit? I can't really tell. You know, take it to the bunker. wasn't a high tackle. I'm not sure. But in any way, pulled her backwards onto the ground. And so she landed in the wet grass because it had been raining. And then it appeared as if they were then trying to both direct her away but also bring her to her feet. Lydia Thorpe instead crawled away across the grass, calling, "Leave me alone," while activists supporting Posey Parker yelled out, "Let women speak, let women speak." And she eventually crawled and stood up and went and joined the other group. So whatever happens, people will say, look, she interrupted a speech. She intervened in that, and that security was required to protect the person who was there speaking. Others say no senator, indeed no citizen, should be handled in that way by security. And, you know, the decision, you know, the views on this really reflect the views of everybody who has an opinion on it.
Some might say, well, Lydia Thorpe, a bit like in the Mardi Gras, was desperate to put herself in the centre of attention, as a centre of attention, and guess what happened? That's what happened. Look, finally, too, by the way, before you leave, before you go, the New South Wales election, of course, is on Saturday. This is big news for people in New South Wales. If the New South Wales government falls, well, there's only Jeremy Rockliffe in Tasmania who'll be left for the coalition amongst
states. Yes, the mainlanders.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be Labor everywhere. The polls seem to suggest that, it's unclear, isn't it? Nobody's likely to get a majority. It'll be a minority government, and probably Labor's favoured to win on that basis. Although, gee, it's close, isn't it? How are you calling it, Hugh?
Well, I think one of the things the pollsters are telling me is that the voters are very soft, that there's a very large undecided group, and that there's not a kind of very strong view. There's not that sense that there's a move on. Now, it could be that when they get in the booth, when you've got 16% undecided on the resolve poll, you know, if most of those swing one way or the other, it could still be a landslide. you'd think it'd be more likely to be a landslide to Labour than to the Coalition. But it could well be that some of that comes back to the Coalition. Dominic Perrottet, the Premier, has proven himself to be quite admired. Who knows, he might snatch something out of the fire. But I did note today, and if you've covered a few dozen elections over the years, one of the things you watch for is what are they doing in the final days, because it shows where they're putting their final desperate energy. And Chris Minns, the Labour leader, was out in the bush in Monaro and Goulburn, which is seats that are not held by the Labour Party, running hard to try to pick up a couple of regional seats and put them into his basket. And Dom Perrottet was out in two Sydney suburban seats, which he holds, including one, Des Moines, which the Liberal Party holds by 13.6%. Now, you don't campaign in a seat.
They're obviously worried.
The sitting MP there has run afoul of a scandal, so he's no longer in the Liberal Party. And so they plainly think they're vulnerable in a seat that which they're holding by, they were holding by 13.6%. There's some kind of clue as to how they think it's going to go.
Mm. Yes, indeed. It'll be most absorbing, it must be said. All right, good to talk, and terrific. Thanks for your time.
Great to talk to you, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.